Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Tuesday edition. We'll start with a big thanks to John Hansen for filling in for me yesterday as I took the day off, enjoyed the day pretty much on the couch. So thanks for John filling in. A little bit later in the program, in fact, later this half hour, we'll talk to Lori Lode. She is the founder of Get America Covered. We're going to talk about the numbers of people signing up for Obamacare, you know, kind of record numbers, even though there's been a push to kill it. And just getting word now from the Senate that Senate leaders will consider a repeal of Obamacare, of the individual mandate, when they take up their Senate tax reform bill. So that is a big development. We'll talk to Lori about that coming up in the Biz Lunch just a little bit later. Right now, we start with CNBC's John Nigerian, who joins us on the phone line. John, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Well, great to be back with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so where do we start? I mean, we could go oil prices or GE. I'll flip that coin and leave it for you.
Oh, God, let's go to oil prices. Okay. GE is one of those falling knives that I tried to catch.
Oh, didn't go well?
No, not well at all so far.
All right, well, let's start with oil then, because oil's big down big today too, right? There were a lowering of expectations for productivity. Is that what led to it?
Well, I believe it's more people paying attention to the estimates that by, I believe, 2025, the United States will be capable of producing more crude oil and refined products than is Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
And that's, of course, because of the shale revolution that we've got going on. So I think that, Stephen, is going to continue. That doesn't mean that crude oil has to go straight down, but demand has remained robust, and some of the reason that it's back up in the mid to high 50s was really what that purge that went on in Saudi Arabia just a week ago.
And all right, let's do GE then, because it's down 13% in the last couple of days. I don't want to dig the knife in any deeper, but is this the bottom for them? Are they going to recover, or are they going to go further down?
I believe they will recover. Like I say, it's been a painful trade for me already. But down at this level, I'm looking at committing some investor capital. A lot of times, Stephen, what I'll do is if I think something's a good buy, I'll start scaling into it myself. And in this case, that did not serve me so well because I started buying it when the stock was over 20 and now it's under 18. So, down here at this level, though, based on what they said about their upcoming quarters are going to be, they're very positive about the turnaround that they believe will be in place, but not until basically the end of 2018. So that's why I think the market's not really happy with how long that turnaround is taking, much like the market didn't like about the extension of perhaps or the delay of taxes until 2019 for corporates.
Yeah, I know you allow yourself one bad decision a year, so look at it this way, it's over.
Well, yeah, so that was it then. And here I thought it was that chili dog at the Bears.
No, that was nothing.
The bad decision.
We have talked in the past about the hurricanes and that there will be eventual winners out of those terrible losses. And Home Depot reported earnings and revenue beyond expectations today. But the stock, I don't know if it's still down, but it was still trading lower earlier in the day. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah, and that's because of the forward-looking nature of Wall Street itself. So people are investing based on where they think a stock will be 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years from now in some cases. And obviously the shorter term that you get, the more things like a one-time or in this case, I guess this year, three- or four-time event, multiple storms hitting across Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, and then, of course, the rebuilding out in California and Puerto Rico. Most of that benefits pretty directly Home Depot, but it was priced in. Buy rumors, sell news. So for the most part, we have been taking profits in all of those stocks that we thought would be impacted, which would include Home Depot and Home Depot Supply, HDS, because basically that buy rumors, sell news adage it tends to work out that way, Stephen. When people actually know the story and have reacted to it already, there's not a lot of left as far as additional catalysts until a new one comes along.
All right, John Najarian, what are you watching today?
Well, let's see. Here's one that was down hard that we were buying today and yesterday, and it was Bed Bath & Beyond. That's three B's and a Y, BBBY. The stock was $40 3 months ago, last quarter. They had a bad report, and the stock dropped down. Now you're buying it at $20 a share, half price. So
wow.
We think that they'll be able to justify, the earnings will justify where the stock is now, and perhaps a little optimism on how they'll do into the holiday shopping season. So we were buying that stock today, Stephen.
All right. It's holidays are coming, time for my annual trip into Bed Bath & Beyond.
There you go.
We'll talk again next week. Right. I appreciate it. That's John Najarian. You can see him on CNBC. Follow him on Twitter as well, at John Najarian. 1223 in Chicago, 123 in Washington, D.C. I don't know if the House Republicans in their lunch today, if they're still meeting or not, but there was reporting from Bloomberg News that as they met today, they were going to talk about including a repeal of Obamacare, the individual mandate, in the Senate tax reform plan as they move toward voting on it. House will vote first, perhaps as soon as Thursday, but then comes the Senate plan. All right, Obamacare has been taking off in the sign-up period. Lori Lotus is on a phone line. She is a former official at the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Service, the founder of Get America Covered. Lori, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I don't know where to start because the idea was we were gonna kick around the numbers and the explosion sort of in the signups. I want to get to that, but maybe we should start with this news from Bloomberg, where it looks like and they are quoting. Well, Rand Paul said he was going to bring up an amendment that would repeal the individual mandate, and then Bloomberg now is reporting that Majority Whip Cornyn and third-ranking Republican John Thune said a repeal is under discussion and would be raised at this conference lunch, which presumably is going on right now. As a Obamacare proponent, I'm just wondering what you make of all of that.
Well, you're right. It is under consideration, and I do think here within the next hour or so, we'll have a good idea or a better sense of whether or not they're going to include the repeal of the individual responsibility, individual mandate provision, if they're going to include it in their tax plan. Here's what we know, though, is that all this will do is it will mean 13 million fewer people have health insurance, all to give a bigger tax cut to those who are high income, to those who are really the richest. So that's what's under discussion, and we'll have to see what direction they take here in a little bit.
The CBO scores it that 13 million more people would be uninsured by the year 2027, but it would also save about $338 billion over 10 years. And that's what you're saying. That would help pay for some of the tax cuts. Lori, explain that for me. How does taking away the individual mandate lead to more money in the federal government's coffers?
Well, that's a good question. So a lot of people qualify for financial help, and this is a great segue into our conversation about what's happening during open enrollment. 8 out of 10 people in Chicago, for instance, qualify for financial help. And what that means is they get assistance monthly premiums.
So if the government wasn't requiring them to buy them, buy the insurance, the government wouldn't be required to help supplement their payments.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So, and now here we are. It seems like everyone in the world wants to sign up for Obamacare this year. It's up 179% when compared to last year. Is that because it's under threat? Or how do you explain those numbers?
You know, it's hard. It's a lot of guessing right now. And we'll have a better sense, you know, in the next week or so of what's really happening with enrollment. But you're right. It's a huge start to open enrollment. In fact, it's the biggest start we've ever had.
I mean, maybe the best strategy would be to come under intense attack because the period is down, the advertising is down, the website, I think, is down on Sundays, and yet the numbers keep going up.
Well, I think what it is that there has been a long conversation for the past year about taking away people's health care. And so people have been thinking about their health care a lot more. And when they went to healthcare.gov to see if they had options available to them, they actually found plans that were a lot more affordable, which means more people signed up.
Are you seeing that the more there are more new users than return users, or how does that compare?
Well, so, no, there's still more people who are returning and, choosing a new plan or deciding to stay in their current plan, which is what we're encouraging people to do, to shop around, to make sure you're in the right plan. However, there are really a lot of new people signing up as well. In fact, almost double of how many signed up in the previous year in a similar time period. So that is really great news. What we don't know, though, is will that continue? Because the advertising doesn't have an effect right now. It builds over time, right?
Oh, sure.
And so we're really worried about that. Those final few weeks right before the deadline, that's the point that we're really nervous about.
And the deadline coming up December 15th, so it's a shorter period this year than it has been in the past. Lori Lotus, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, Suzanne Muchen is the co-host of The Big Payoff. That's a podcast you can hear at WGNradio.com and elsewhere. It talks about the women in the workplace, issues such as that, and man, has that been in demand in recent weeks. She joins us on a phone line this Tuesday afternoon. Suzanne, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Did you see there was the best Saturday Night Live skit on Saturday night with this woman who was like Lori from HR, who is completely overwhelmed and freaking out?
Oh, yeah.
It's the best. You can just imagine that anyone like me who covers these topics of women in the workplace, and especially in people who are in HR, I can't even imagine.
We were kind of talking about this in email. I don't want to beat a dead horse all of the time, but
right.
It just keeps
yeah.
coming. And so one of the interesting things was Sean Hannity, who, you know, has been, I think, pretty remarkable in the views he's taking in the past 6-8 months or so. But he had Roy Moore on recently, and then some sponsors started to go, right? One of them was
yeah.
Keurig, and they got into trouble because they pulled their money from the Hannity show.
Yes. And what's interesting about all of this now is that the advertisers, like the boards of corporations, are starting to show that they care about what the marketplace thinks. And Keurig also had a massive social media incident where people were smashing
right.
Keurigs and showing videos of it. I mean, the marketplace is speaking. I think what's hopeful to me is that we aren't just looking at a small group of people making decisions. This is a movement.
Wait a minute, though. The people smashing the Keurigs were conservatives angry with Keurig.
I understand, but I'm saying the marketplace is now in the conversation.
Okay.
Right?
Well,
the conversations have moved out of just boardrooms and HR offices. The people are getting involved.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing because the CEO, Bob Gamgort, issued a statement either today or yesterday,
yes,
last
yes.
night, saying that that they did it in an incorrect way, that they should have just kind of pulled the ad and not made
yeah.
a big deal out of it, because that's what led to the sort of the crashing Keurigs.
Keurigs, right.
So that shows that the other side still has some sway as well. You know, I mean, they are standing by their decision, but they're kind of backing off of it at the same time.
But I'm okay with that, Steve. From where I sit, the fact that this is now a public conversation is what matters most. Of course, there are going to be people on both sides, but I'm interested in the conversation around harassment in the workplace that doesn't just live over there at arm's distance. It is about other people and not us. I'd actually rather have the people smashing the Keurigs, because at least it leads to a conversation around who has the power to make decisions. I mean, if you remember with Bill O'Reilly, it was advertisers pulling out that started the tumble that ultimately led to his demise.
Right. And it's different to withdraw from Hannity. I mean, the O'Reilly thing was it was his activity, his actions.
It was his behavior.
This
right.
is the way Hannity is sort of giving people a pass, or I'm not sure what Hannity does, frankly. There's not a lot of truthiness involved anymore.
I think, honestly, it was the fact that he gave Roy Moore a platform and then didn't really try to be a good journalist in terms of trying to get to
the truth.
Well,
we learned that Roy Moore generally didn't date teenagers when he was in his
30s. He generally did not.
So the thing I really want to talk to you about is this article you sent me from the Girl Scouts.
Yep.
I don't know how you feel about it, but, man, do I feel strongly about it. So set it up. Explain it for me.
The Girl Scouts of America, who we've talked about often on this show, is a source of growing empowerment messaging for young girls, has put out this article, which is right in time for the holidays, that is basically saying, you know, parents and grandparents, when you do that thing where you force your kids, young girls in particular, to hug and kiss their relatives, or maybe they get a gift and you say to them, oh, don't you want to give Uncle Stan a nice kiss? That is 100% wrong, that you should not be putting young girls in the position of associating affection or gift giving with them in turn having to show physical affection on command.
Suzanne?
Yes?
I like you. I have great respect for you. I value your opinion. Please tell me you don't share that view.
I share it 100%.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. Here's why it's ridiculous.
I share it 100%.
Here's why it's ridiculous is because this is a case where, and I understand, I can see how that equation might add up, might equal something, but it assumes that it's only girls that this is happening to. In my house, my son was an absolute reluctant hugger. And, you know, every holiday he'd have to give his Aunt Christy a hug. It became a joke, and he started laughing about it years later, too. Boys are required to do that as well. And I just, the boys aren't growing up to be victims or paying sex for favors or things like that. So I just think it's.
Oh, Steve, follow that bouncing ball, okay? If the reason that boys aren't growing up to be submissive and are not the victims of inappropriate physical contact is not because their parents told them to hug and it worked out fine for them. It's because as they then became adults in the workplace, what this is showing is that men in general tend to not fear the same sources of power as women do. They don't fear their boss. They're not worried that their boss is going to assault them. It's a different mindset. I'm just going to give you
But the activity we're supposed to stop is a sort of a family enforcement for boys and girls.
Look, if the Boy Scouts of America want to come out with a similar article, would that make this any different to you? If the Boy Scouts put out as
no,
well,
I,
the Boy Scouts I, not include girls. Too,
I don't think this. I think that they're reaching for a solution. I don't think this is a solution to the problem. That's the point I'm trying to say. I understand how it all adds up, but I don't think that because you have to hug your aunt, you know, and get her lipstick smears on your cheek when you're 4 years old, I don't think that makes you more inclined to be a victim of sexual harassment when you're 24 years old.
I just think
that's such a reach.
I think that's not exactly where this is going.
Oh, really?
I think you took it one step further. I think what they're saying is, what are we teaching young girls about consent? They're not talking about and therefore being a victim. They're talking about how do you teach young girls to feel that they can say no and have a say over what they do with their lips, with their hands, with their bodies. It's about empowering them to be able to make those decisions on their own. I don't think it's taking it all the way to where you just took it.
Yeah, I just think that's I'm in search for solutions myself. I just feel like this one isn't a solution. I just don't feel that way. I mean, I feel like the boys are the ones who have to be forced into those faux emotions more than the girls, I feel. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today, Suzanne. I'm sorry that we're not going to resolve it. Maybe we'll bring it up again.
This is the beauty of our back and forth. We don't always agree.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, President Trump is coming back to the U.S., coming back to the debate over tax reform and all of that. And maybe a little debate over the Paradise Papers. Not sure about that. John Swain is a reporter for The Guardian who's been writing about all of this, and he joins us now on a phone line. John, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start generally because, you know, the Paradise Papers have been in the news for a week or so, but I don't know, there's so much in the news that everyone's caught up on it. Explain for me what these papers are and how it is we've come to know about them.
So this is a leak of about 13 million documents about offshore tax havens. We've come to know about them because they were leaked to a German newspaper called Süddeutsche Zeitung, who then shared them with a consortium of international media, including The Guardian and The New York Times and other newspapers from around the world.
And these came from a law firm that sort of gave up the documents?
They didn't give them up. They were leaked. And so, as you say, it was a law firm named Appleby, which specializes in offshore finance. It has offices in Bermuda, in the Isle of Man, and it helps wealthy individuals and corporations arrange their affairs offshore to avoid taxes and to avoid regulation and to do things like that.
Okay, so I'm assuming that if I read about these documents, that the people using the money there were nefarious in one form or another, and then I see that the Queen of England is involved. Explain that for me.
Well, this is all, in the most part, legal. This is the system that has been set up by international authorities, allowing people to move their money and their investments offshore. And one of those people, as you say, is the Queen of England. She has a large amount of wealth in her estate, and she has advisors who invested for her. And it turns out they've invested some of her money, some of her millions of pounds offshore, and in doing so, made her investments end up in some companies that are involved in hire purchase stores and other things that have been accused of kind of exploiting poorer consumers.
All right, so there's the Queen. Let's bring it closer to the U.S. then. And Wilbur Ross has been tainted here because we learned about some investments he has with a company involved with Vladimir Putin's son-in-law, investments that he didn't disclose when he went before the Congress.
So Wilbur Ross appears again and again in these leaked documents. He had, before he entered government, he had dozens of offshore investment vehicles that he used as a kind of private equity tycoon to make lots of money from different companies. And one such investment, as you mentioned, turns out to connect him to Vladimir Putin's son-in-law. Wilbur Ross owns a stake in a shipping company named Navigator. And Navigator does millions of dollars of business with a Russian gas company named Seabur, which is part owned by Putin's son-in-law. And Ross did disclose to a certain extent his holdings when he joined government, but it wasn't clear that he actually retained them as he entered government and retained them to this day.
Did I read as well that Gary Cohn, the president's economic advisor, and Rex Tillerson, the secretary of state, are involved in this in one form or another as well?
Yeah, they do appear in the leak as well, to a lesser extent than Ross. Gary Cohn, obviously, before he joined Trump's administration, was at Goldman Sachs, and as a result, appears again and again in these documents as an officer of kind of offshore investment vehicles that Goldman Sachs used in relation to an investment in General Motors. Rex Tillerson appears in his former guise as an executive at ExxonMobil. They had an oil and gas drilling venture in Yemen, which used offshore investment vehicles to kind of avoid tax on that. And he appears there. He ended up as chief executive of ExxonMobil before joining Trump's administration. So, as you said, there are several different associates and aides to the president who appear in these leaked documents.
And again, just because their names are in these documents doesn't mean they were doing anything illegal. In fact, maybe they were doing something economically very smart for them. But the question then is, if you have these top advisors and other big players in the country involved in this offshore money, how is it they can tell us how to reform our taxes? I mean, it just seems to me like they might be tainted a little bit. How does that come to play in the whole tax reform debate in this country?
Well, it's interesting. Donald Trump campaigned on one particular promise to institute a one-off tax holiday, a 10% one-off tax rate for people bringing their money back onshore. And I suppose, you know, one thing that this shows is several people involved in his government and involved in this effort stand to gain from that.
So there's a lot to bring back. Well, we would want that money back in here so that that might help the country as well, even if they get a one-day tax break.
I think everyone would argue that, but, you know, it's better for the country if everyone's investments are brought back on shore. That's right.
John Swain is a reporter for The Guardian. Did your name come up in these papers, these 13 million documents, John?
Thankfully not. I don't have nearly as much money to invest. So.
And you didn't see mine either, did you?
I didn't. I can confirm that.
I think we're okay then. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.